Living Room Logic.
Everyone, welcome back to yet another episode of Living Room Logic, and I'm so happy to be here today with a clean energy transition researcher, Dr. Paul Dean. Dr. Dean, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Ed. Great to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Dean is a senior researcher in the Marley Centre down in Cork, focusing his research on clean energy futures. And it's quite amazing. You've published over 120 technical reports on clean energy scenarios. And I see that you're frequently involved in energy policy in Ireland and Europe. Could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I'm a research scientist or a research fellow down in Marae. Marae is the Science Foundation Ireland Centre for Energy, Climate and Marine. And I have a really nice job. It's really enjoyable. I get to think about the future every day. So Aidan, yeah. I guess I think about how we will produce our electricity, how we will produce our food, how we will move around, get from A to B, how we will keep our homes cozy and warm, and how we will fuel our industry. So I think about how we can do these things, not only in the future, but how we can do these things in a clean way. And I guess the reason why I do that is wrapped around a number of, I suppose, dimensions. We think about this from a climate change perspective. You know, it's a really massively important issue and a really big challenge. Many would say correctly a big opportunity for us here in Ireland, but also we're fundamentally reliant on fossil fuels here in Ireland. Ireland, you know, we like to think of ourselves, Aidan, as being a very green and clean country, and in many ways we are, but unfortunately we're one of the most fossil fuel dependent countries in Europe. And over the next hour, we are going to spend over €1 million importing fossil fuel into Ireland. And when you think about the how rich the country, it's crazy, isn't it? You know, I mean, €1 million, it's just over €24 million every day. When you think about how rich we are in terms of natural resources and our ability to produce energy and save energy, that's a real crazy number, isn't it?
Well, it is. And you've kind of already gone into this because I really wanted to give everyone an indication of where we are coming from in the past in terms of energy production. So before we get into this, what you've already said is kind of a dirty present. Where were we in the past in terms of energy production? What did people in Ireland use to power and heat things?
Energy is so fundamentally important to our economy and our society. And and actually that link between the economy and society is quite important. And so we tend to find with energy use that the more active an economy is, or the more growth there is in economy, the more active we are as a society, the more we are as humans. We consume more, we move around more, we heat more, and we tend to move to use more energy. Now, if we go back, let's say, to the 1990s or the 1980s, and many people listening might be familiar with that time, Ireland's economy was relatively depressed. It wasn't the big booming economy that we have today. And the energy system that we had was quite different. We actually still use a lot of the same fuels. Oil was predominantly the main fuel, and oil was used to get people to heat homes, to drive cars, to drive trucks. But we didn't actually use a lot of it. And that's linked really to our economic activity. Ireland was very different, not only economically, but socially as well back then. You know, there was different habits and different traits. You know, some of the funny things, even 30, 40 years ago, showering wasn't that big a deal. People used to take baths maybe once a week. So we use less water for heating our homes. You know, our homes were a lot cooler. Typically, a modern home in Ireland now would be heated to about 21 to 22 degrees.
Yeah.
For our parents or many people listening when they were kids, your home would have been heated about 16 degrees. So we use a lot less energy for our homes. We drove a lot less. You know, we went on holidays to the next county. You know, we didn't fly off to Spain or to these places.
Exactly.
It was a lot more humble. Many people would say it was a lot better, but you know, that's open to interpretation. But it certainly was a lot simpler, and certainly we consumed a lot less and we used a lot less energy.
What's so interesting about that is just it clearly is a very cultural thing. And of course, as you said, people probably just wore a lot more sweaters and didn't go far.
No, it's, I guess many people would argue, an older generation, they would argue, well, they were more resilient. You know, they were more robust and resilient and maybe a bit hardy, but who knows? But they also had less stuff. You know, life was a bit harder. They didn't have as many of the appliances that we had. So there would have been very few dishwashers, washing machines, tumble dryers, electric showers. These are the things that comes. These are the trappings and, I suppose, the benefits of a of a modern economy and a modern society, they certainly didn't have the gadgets that we have, you know, the tablets, the phones, you know, they're naturally a very more recent phenomenon. I suppose the upshot of all that then, Aidan, when you bring that economic activity and social activity and you wrap the energy system around it, the energy system was a lot smaller. Electricity would have been mainly generated from things like oil, which is really inefficient and really dirty. And that has changed very much so in the last 20, 30 years. Most homes would have been heated again to a very low degree with oil and with coal and with peat. And again, that's changed dramatically as well in Ireland. And while cars were pretty much the same in terms of what they do, they moved from A to B. Cars back in the 80s and the 90s were very inefficient. You know, they used a lot of petrol, used a lot of diesel. They were very heavy. They were very clunky. So even though we didn't use a lot of energy at a national level per se, the stuff that we did use was relatively inefficient and very dirty as well in terms of polluting, in terms of greenhouse gases.
You've kind of mentioned it at the start as well, that we kind of have changed a bit. Well, we've definitely increased it, but in terms of our energy production, our carbon emissions. But how much of an increase in terms of capacity, and have we actually changed at all in how we produce energy today?
That's a really strong question. Yeah. So let's talk about greenhouse gas emissions. So these are the heat trapping gases that go into the atmosphere and are causing our planet to warm in really unusual and dangerous ways. Funnily enough, Aidan, Ireland is the only country, Ireland's emissions this year, 2022, are pretty much the same as they were in 1990. Now you can look at that in two ways. You can say, wow, we haven't got any worse, but we also haven't got any better. You know, if you compare our emissions today to what the UK have done, for example, our nearest neighbor, they probably have reduced their emissions at a national level by about 45 to 47% since 1990. Right across Europe, emissions would have reduced by about 25 to 27% since 1990. We have a zero change. Our emissions are pretty much the same. Now, people will argue two elements of that and say, look, Ireland industrialized a lot later. We became richer a lot later, so we're still playing catch up. You know, and that's fair to say that did happen. But our position in terms of emissions is not a good story to tell the world, unfortunately. And again, it comes back to that thing I said at the start. It's we think of ourselves as green and clean. That's okay, but Ireland as a country, our emissions are small within a global context. But really, if we're being honest with ourselves, that's just a coincidence of geography, right? We're a small island, so of course we're going to be small in a global context. But if we look at the consequences of our economic and social activity, again, this is how we move around, how we heat our homes, how we generate electricity, then you and me as Irish citizens would have the second largest carbon footprint or greenhouse gas footprint in Europe on a per person basis. And that's really disappointing. Yeah. So and that comes back again to the inefficiencies that we have in Ireland about how we use energy. And again, our that 1 million euros that we're going to spend this hour importing fossil fuel into Ireland, all that releases emissions. And when we look at that on a per person basis, we would have the second highest greenhouse gas footprint per person in Europe. So it's not a good story to share.
It's quite shocking. I didn't know that. And it's definitely something that we need to work on. I mean, how this kind of works quite well into my next question. What sort of goals do we have in terms of reducing our carbon emissions, and what's the plan to achieve these goals? And do you think these goals are good?
Yeah, so I've told you all the bad news now, Aidan. So it's let's look to the future.
Some good news, Paul.
thankfully, over the last couple of years, there's a really strong environmental movement, very strong climate movement in Ireland. And in many ways, this has grown out of grassroots from, you know, programs like Antashka and primary schools with green flags and universities and just a much greater awareness. And this is translated into political activity at the moment. So the current government, the coalition, has primarily driven, let's be honest, by the Green Party, have a plan to reduce Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions, all those greenhouse gas emissions, by 50% over this decade. That is remarkably hard. Just put it in context, Aidan, no country in the world has ever deliberately achieved that in a peacetime period. So reducing our emissions by half it's something we need to do because we're starting on the back foot. We're starting at the back of the pack in relation to our other European member states and other countries around the world. But it's going to be remarkably difficult. It's going to be very challenging. We know we can do it. We know we have the technologies. We know what we have to do. So we have the blueprints. You know, we're not fumbling around in the dark here.
Yeah.
But we know it's going to be difficult and it's going to take radical change across society and across the political system to deliver that.
This plays in quite well as well.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're talking about we have a map there or a roadmap. What sort of roadmap is it? Can you tell us a little bit about that roadmap?
Sure, I can. And the reason I can is because that's kind of my day job with my colleagues here in Marai. We come up with these blueprints and these maps to help us navigate the future, bring us to that low carbon future. So let's talk about electricity. That's the anybody who's listening to this on their device or at home, you know, look around your home at the moment or look around your office or the street. Electricity is the main thing we use to power our appliances, our gadgets, and our TVs and whatever. So there's a really good news story for Ireland in terms of how we've changed our electricity generation. So remember, I said back in the 90s, a lot of stuff was done with oil and coal. Oil has been pretty much eliminated now from electricity generation in Ireland. That's really good. We don't use coal that much anymore, which is also good because coal is very polluting. We still use it, you know, for about 10% of our electricity, but nothing like we were using it back in the 80s. And and two things happened.
Change.
And that's a huge change and really significant and almost kind of subtle. You know, when you turn on your switch, the light is still there, but it's actually a cleaner electricity coming into your house. Yeah. And so two things happened there, Aidan. One was the significant growth in renewables, in particularly in onshore wind. So anyone driving around the country at the moment, you don't have to drive very far before you can see a wind farm maybe nearby or off in the distance. Yeah. So 2020, about 40, the most official statistics, about 40% of all our electricity came from renewables, whereas back in the 80s and 90s, it was close to zero. That's really promising, and that's really good. And that's wind blowing for a country.
And actually something we can be quite proud of.
And we should be proud of it, because very few countries have achieved that. So we have form in doing things that we haven't expected we can do. And the other thing that we did as well at the same time, we started using a lot of natural gas. Natural gas, while it is a fossil fuel, it's the cleanest, if you can say that, of all the fossil fuels. It's the one that produces the least. So what we have in Ireland at the moment is that we have, for the electricity system, we almost have a two-fuel system, what we call a dual-fuel system. But it's very, very windy. We're using natural resources like wind to produce most of our electricity and using very little natural gas. And then when it's not very windy, we're typically using a lot of natural gas, which is the cleanest available fossil fuel at the moment. And that allows us to have a cleaner electricity system. And we've pretty much halved our emissions, actually, for electricity generation in Ireland over the last 30 years. That's a good news story. The challenge, though, while that is a good news story and we've done good there, we've done pretty bad then in other sectors. So cars, remember we talked about, well, people didn't used to drive much. We now drive about 35 billion kilometres in Ireland every year. And just to kind of put it in context, Aidan, that's the space probe was a discovery was launched in 1978-77 and it was sent out into interstellar space, and it's traveled about 18 billion kilometers so far. We drive collectively twice that amount in Ireland every single year. It's incredible, isn't it? So we
love our cars.
We're addicted to our cars, so we drive about our parents or people who are listening to this who are a bit older and maybe driving in the 90s typically drove about a half of what we're driving at the moment. And it's not just that we're driving longer, we're driving further, but a lot of families now have two cars. You know, it's become almost a necessity. So the opportunity that we missed there, Aidan, was really around public transport and around spatial planning. You know, a lot of European countries just got families to build their homes closer to each other. and then use public transport to move people around. We didn't really do that in Ireland. We encouraged families to live far apart from each other and then use the car instead of
use the
transport.
Car to get around.
Yeah, and that has caused a big increase in oil consumption in Ireland, and also a big increase in emissions. And that's kind of offset all those good things that we're doing with electricity. They've been offset with increased emissions from the other sectors, from transport.
Okay, it's so cool to get a breakdown, because it's so clearly not just one thing. This task is clearly, you have to fight each sector, and they are their complete own story, and that must also be incredibly complicated.
It is. And Joe, we like to think about it like a Rubik's cube. You know, if you stare at one side of a Rubik's cube long enough, you can solve that side, but then the other sides are all messed up. And when you're thinking about energy, you really need to look at everything together. So you need to look at how we power our homes with electricity, how we fuel our cars with oil or fossil fuels, how we heat our homes, how we fuel industry, and how we grow our food. So when you look at all these things holistically and in an integrated way, you see, yes, it is very complex, but you also see, wow, you know, there's a lot of things that we should be doing that are good in one area that will benefit other areas, you know. So when we clean up our electricity generation in Ireland, like we're doing, that allows us to produce clean electricity, which we can use to power electric cars. And that removes the amount of oil and petrol and diesel that we use for moving around and replaces it with clean electricity. And that's a good thing. So that's how you spot that. You know, doing something good in one area can be beneficial for another area that you might have thought about previously.
I want to ask you one more question about that, but before I do, you talked a bit about the UK and their energy production. Are there any other countries that we can really learn from in terms of the things that we're lacking in? Well, for one, it's our cars, our transport. So are there other countries that we can learn from in terms of how to transition a whole transport industry towards clean energy?
We spend a lot of time looking at Scandinavia as well. In Scandinavia, or, you know, like everything they do, like, you know, they've given the world IKEA and all these wonderful things. So they're pretty clever up there. But what they tend to do in Sweden and Finland and Norway, they look internally at the country. They look at the strengths that they have, the resources that they have. So, for example, we're going through a very serious energy crisis at the moment. And in Ireland, we're very worried about natural gas being cut off to Ireland, natural gas being cut off to mainland Europe, because that would impact us here in Ireland. Mm-hmm. In Finland, for example, they're not too worried about that because they use very little natural gas. Back in the 60s and 70s, they looked at their country and they said, wow, we have a very active ecosystem here. We grow lots of trees. We grow things very well. So bioenergy, energy that you grow, either waste timber or fuels that you grow, are a huge part of their economy. They're one of the few countries in the world, actually, that the bioeconomy is bigger than the fossil fuel economy. So they produce more energy from timber that they grow, that they use for industry, that they use for, you know, sell on to IKEA and all these other places. And they get most, they also produce a lot of energy from wastes, again, which is a bioenergy resource. And their bioenergy resource is greater than their needs for oil, and it's far greater than their needs for natural gas. And I think there's a lot of merit to be found in that. For a country, it's very easy to look at other countries and say, well, what are they doing? But to look inward at ourselves and say, well, what are we good at here in Ireland? You know, we're very good at renewable electricity. We've proven that. But we're also very good at the potential to grow things in Ireland. And we can grow a lot of energy in Ireland. We grow a lot of grass in Ireland. You can use that grass to mix it with slurries to produce renewable gas that can be a solution to the transport sector, to heavy transport. It can also give farmers who are struggling making ends meet at the moment, give them options to do something else with their land, to stay on the land, but to use that land differently. So there's some of the things I think that we can look at other countries and just seeing how they figured out how to use resources that they had in their country, how to use them sensibly, and how to play to their strengths. And in Ireland, I think our very obvious strength is renewable energy, not just wind and solar and wave, but also our ability to grow things, I think has got big potential here as well.
Yeah, that's a great one that I would not think of straight away at all. We have such a long growing season. We have really good land throughout the country.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, Aidan, that our agriculture sector has become so successful. You know, it's really it's linked to sustainability, but our agriculture system in Ireland is coming under pressure. It's gone to a level of intensification that requires the land to be overworked, that overburdens the biodiversity. It's a lot of pressure on water quality, air quality, and still most farmers get underpaid. As part of these climate change commitments that we have in Ireland, we also recognize, hey, look, greenhouse gases don't just come from fossil fuels. They also, unfortunately, come from things like animals, like livestock, like the beef and dairy herds. So looking at ways to give farmers other options that allow us to reduce the emissions coming from livestock is a good thing, because it allows farmers to financially remain feasible, but it also reduces the environmental burden on the other elements of the ecosystem, such as water quality, air quality, and biodiversity. And again, that's one of those kind of Rubik's Cube moments. When you look at all the dimensions of a problem, you can see that, well, you know, by solving this part of the problem, other elements can wrap around that solution as well.
You've given such a good overview of our situation. I'm really interested in asking you about some of the more nitty-gritty stuff you've been involved in. Could you tell us about some research items that you've been working on?
Yeah, we did a really nice study last year looking at this net zero carbon energy, a net zero energy system. And a net zero energy system, essentially, it's a way of powering our economy, or fueling our economy, our homes, our industries, our enterprises, but without emitting greenhouse gases. And that was really interesting. It was a piece of work that we did that was funded by industry, by the Irish Wind Energy Association and others. And what we did was we looked at the things that we're good at in Ireland. We looked at our ability to grow crops without competing with food production. We looked at our ability to save energy from homes. We looked at our ability to maybe cycle a bit more, walk a bit more. So we use our car a bit less. We looked at the huge wind resource and solar resource that we have here in Ireland, our wave resource. And we kind of put numbers with, well, how much could we produce? And one of the things that we did in Aidan was we put all that into a very large computer simulation, and we simulated the year 2050 and the year 2030. And within that simulation, we come up with a blueprint or an architecture that allows us to understand how we can maintain that economic activity in Ireland, because economic activity is important. It gives people jobs. It's really important for the financial elements of the country. And we found, yes, we can achieve all those things and also reduce our emissions. And the biggest way to do that was, first of all, by, again, very obviously, leveraging that huge renewable resource that we have in Ireland. So our wind, our solar, and our bioenergy resource as well. That was very important. The other thing that we found was that saving energy is really important. So, and saving energy is really neat, because it's almost the cheapest form of energy that you can have is energy that you don't use. So if you're not using something, it's costing you nothing, and that's really good. So by being more efficient is really important. So and one way you can do that is by making our homes more cozier, less drafty, so they leak less heat. And there's huge potential for Ireland to save energy and money there. So a typical Irish home, for example, Aidan, would probably leak about 60% of its heat. So if you're paying €1,000 a year heating your home, probably 600 is seeping out through your windows, your walls, your roof. Yeah. No, it's waste, you know, so by making our building
that would drive people crazy to hear that.
It's really disappointing, isn't it? You know, now it's not all easy. If you retrofit your home or put in windows or different types of insulation, the upfront cost is very heavy. So there's almost a financial disincentive there, because all the cost is upfront and the savings are long term. As humans, we don't tend to like those things, but that's why policy should change. So we figured out that by using all these things, by producing more renewable energy in Ireland, wind and solar and bioenergy, by saving more energy. And the third dimension, I suppose, of that pillar to achieve an energy system that doesn't pollute in the future is with electricity. So today, even though we often talk about energy and electricity as being the same thing, they're not. Most of our energy in Ireland comes from fossil fuels for powering our cars, our industry, and heating our homes. Electricity is really only limited to our gadgets and our appliances. But in the future, we know that we need to put more plugs on things, because we're really good at producing electricity. So we need electricity to reach deeper into society, deeper into the economy. And one way you can do that is by electrifying things. So by having more electric cars, by having more e-scooters, e-bikes, by having more electric heating systems, that allows us to use something we're very good at in areas of the economy that we're not really good at the moment. And those synergies and those overlaps allow us to meet that demand of an energy system that doesn't pollute in the future. And we have all these things. You know, one of the, I suppose, most revealing things about our research is that you know, we're not talking about new technologies or unicorn technologies that need to be invented or need to come to market. We know how to do this today. We have these technologies. Most of them are commercial today. Some of them need a little bit.
Need more commercial push. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's okay. So we have the know-how. We have the blueprints. And the really surprising thing about that study was we found it doesn't cost a huge amount of money, actually. So people often talk about energy transitions, and they talk about one of the great things in Ireland in the past was the building of Ardna Crusha. So Ardna Crusha was the ESB electricity generation built in the 40s or maybe even earlier.
Yeah.
And at that time, 25% of all the money flowing through the Irish economy went into Ardna Crusha. It was a huge capital expenditure. What we found is actually to get this net zero energy system that doesn't pollute, we need to redirect about 2% of all the money flowing through the economy into clean energy. And that's enough to achieve to pay for that that energy system. And that's really remarkable, because we often think that, well, climate action is expensive and moving away from fossil fuels is expensive. It's not actually. Mm-hmm. The real expensive thing is climate inaction, and staying with fossil fuels is the most expensive thing. Yes, we do have to invest a lot more. And the challenge there is just the philosophy, like I said, about the homes. It's the cost for renewables tends to be a lot upfront and very little in the future. Whereas our energy system and everything that we do today, like if you buy a home heating system, it's a little bit upfront and then a little bit, you know, and a lot then into the future when you look at it over a 20-year lifetime. But renewables, it's the complete inverse of that. It's a lot upfront and very little in the future. And for that, really, we need different ways of thinking, different ways of financing, and different ways of supporting people. And I guess the caveat to all the same is, look, it's really hard. Just because something is doable doesn't mean it's easy. You know, I often like to think of these things like, you know, that RTE show, Operation Transformation, where, you know, they bring candidates on, they get them to lose weight or whatever. You know, it sounds like a simple concept, but it's really difficult, isn't it? You know, changing our habits is difficult. It's always difficult up front. There's resistance. We don't want to do it as humans. And that's perfectly, and there's a bit of fear involved as well. Maybe that's perfectly normal. But also like Operation Transformation, you know, if you're able to be healthier and lose weight or do whatever, there's benefits for your mental health. There's benefits financially, maybe. There's broader benefits for your family. So again, when you move away from fossil fuels, it's not just about reducing emissions. It's about increasing employment. It's about reducing pollution in the air. It's about, you know, making our homes more cozy, so that it's not just about the climate emissions anymore. It's about society and it's about a healthier society. And that's what I think is an important element.
That's actually what I wanted to ask you. The way that you talk about the benefits of cleaner energy is a lot in terms of how would it benefit us economically? How would we be able to monetize it? How would we be able to actually make a better economy from it? But you're so right that it's not just the economy, it has to be other things as well.
Yeah.
Is a cleaner energy Ireland going to be better for other things?
Yeah, and that's really important, and certainly it will. You know, because we import that €1 million every hour, that's €1 million we're paying to other countries, to other people working in those countries to produce our energy. So not only are we outsourcing the production of that energy, we're outsourcing the environmental responsibility that comes with reducing it as well. So we don't have a lot of people working actually in the energy sector in Ireland. You know, we've got, you know, you might know someone working in oil and gas or electricity, but in comparison to other countries, we have very few people here actually working in energy in Ireland, because we produce so little ourselves. 70% or so comes from abroad. Yes, there's reducing emissions, but it's about increasing employment. It's about reducing our exposure the geopolitical situations that we're seeing at the moment. So even though Ireland isn't connected by pipeline to Russia at the moment, we're connected by prices. And that's why we're seeing skyrocketing electricity prices in Ireland at the moment. If we had the system.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah. That plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
That we want in 2050, if we had this today, we would be completely insulated from the terrible events that are going on in Russia at the moment. The energy blackmailing, I suppose, that the Kremlin is continuing around Europe. We would be insulated from those because we would produce all of our energy here in Ireland from a resource that is totally immune to geopolitics, the weather. And sure, there are going to be days when it's windy and it's going to be days when it's calm. But we know the technologies that we need to back up the system. We know the ways we can produce clean fuels to do that. So we could really insulate ourselves from the volatility of fossil fuel prices, while at the same time increasing jobs, while at the same time making our air cleaner, making our homes cozier, and making the place a healthier place in general.
I'm just thinking of a scenario because I think it's important for the audience to be able to think of this in their head as well, to actually be able to visualize it. There's a bunch of wind farms offshore. There's a bunch of wind farms onshore. Everyone has solar panels on their houses. Our cars are mainly electric and we're moving away from fueled cars. Yeah. We don't use our cars as much. We use more buses, trains, metros, etc. And our air is cleaner and we have more jobs and we're paying less in terms of fuel and maybe in terms of food. And maybe in terms of everything, that sounds great.
It leaves you the question of where's the catch? If it's all that
it
good.
It does.
And the catch is that we have to invest. You know, that 2% of what we call GDP or all the money that flows through the economy, we need to make that additional investment. And that's the difficulty that we traditionally have here in Ireland with lots of things. We have it in the healthcare system, we have it with transport. We are very resistant to investing in our future. I'm not pulling punches here politically in any parties, but we have a short-termism and a myopic view of the future that kind of falls within the election cycle that focuses more on the next election rather than the next generation. If we were really, and that's where the catch is with all this, you know, if we had social bravery and political bravery to say, look, we need to invest in this future, and yet we're not going to reap the benefits immediately. The benefits of this will be reaped in a decade, in 2 decades. That's our big challenge. You know, we struggle with that in our, and it's not just in Ireland, it's probably in other countries as well. We have the short term.
It isn't just us, right? Yeah, like exactly. A lot of the world works like that, especially in their political system.
A lot of companies think in terms of quarters or in things of the next business cycle, but we need to think in terms of decades. And if we do that, that would help unlock that investment that we need to make in the future.
Are there any other studies or projects that you've been involved in that you'd like to talk about that is to do with this transitioning to clean energy?
Well, let me give you the inverse of one, because sometimes with science and research, you don't always get the results you'd expect. So we looked at a very similar study then for 2030. And you mentioned the word transition there, Aidan. That's really important. So when you're thinking about the future, it's not an abrupt change into a wonderful brave new world where everything is clean and wonderful. It's tricky and there's transition. So we did a lovely piece of work with the Electricity Association of Ireland last year, 2 years ago, where we looked at 8 years into the future. We looked at the year 2030 and we looked at, you know, well, can we get most of our electricity from wind? And we found out, we can. But there's going to be days actually when it's not windy, when it's going to be very cold, you know, and people will need a lot of electricity. What do you do then? And to reveal, though, the answers to that, what we did was we built these very detailed computer simulations of the whole European power system. And we modeled about 250,000 hours of weather data, of wind and solar data flowing across Europe. And we observed what would happen in Ireland. And we get these rare events that don't happen very often, but they just kind of have to happen once. And things become very difficult, where the weather over the UK, Ireland and France becomes very calm. Typically, it happens in January and February. You know those days in February where you go outside and the atmosphere just seems really calm. things are just really still.
It's crisp, it's cold and calm. Yeah,
exactly. So, and the word that we borrowed actually from German researchers is called Dunkelflaute. You know, Germans are great for taking long sentences and condensing them down into one.
We have some German words in some of our episodes of perfectly described things.
Right, they're like ruthlessly efficient, right? So we get these Dunkelflaute incidents. It's calm, it's cold, it's crisp, and they might last for 10 days. And there's no wind, and it's really cold, so everybody's heating their homes. We're all driving a lot more. You need lots of electricity then. So what do you do then? And what we found is actually we need more natural gas. And actually, we found out that we're going to have to build more natural gas turbines in Ireland over the next 10 years, specifically to meet those small pockets of periods. And as a researcher, that's conflicting. That's weird, because you think, well, I want to move away from fossil fuels, but I need to build them in the meanwhile. And politically and socially, that's a very difficult message to communicate. But what we found was that, yes, look, renewables are the best way to reduce emissions in Ireland. And they kind of do this because they reduce the use of fossil fuels in power plants, but they don't eliminate the need for those power plants.
Yeah.
And that's why in Ireland, over the next 10 years, and you'll see it in papers, you'll see it popping up, it will be politically very tricky. Even though we're moving away from fossil fuels, we're still going to have to build more fossil fuel power plant to back up the wind and the solar on the days when we have these Dunkelflaute incidents, until we figure out some way of storing huge volumes of electricity in a cheap and affordable way. And it's difficult to see how we can do that within the next 10 to 12 years. So that was one of the things as a researcher, you know, you kind of run the results and you kind of, wow, you kind of, oh, that's surprising. You know, I didn't expect that. But that's the wonderful thing about research. You know, it's there to kind of challenge you, to test your integrity, I suppose, in many ways. And it reveals sometimes surprising things and sometimes unwelcome things, but it's a robust finding, it's a resilient finding, and something that we have to face into in Ireland.
Well, what's so valuable about understanding that now is that in 10 years' time, if we only invested in offshore and onshore wind, and then you had one of those incidences, and it was a mess.
I don't know about you, but I can't remember the last time I had a power cut at home. The electricity system is so reliable in Ireland at the moment. We take it for granted. And as we move away, you know, from a fossil fuel power system to a weather-driven power system, you're kind of trading the risks of geopolitics for meteorological risks. You're changing it for weather. But you do get these weather events. You get these calm events. And as you said, if everything's powered by weather-driven generation, and if the weather isn't there, what do you do? You can't ask people, look, hang tough for the next 10 days. You need something to back it up. And that's where the fossil fuels come in. In the future, we know there's ways around that. You know, in maybe 15, 20 years' time, we know there's probably ways around that. But for the foreseeable future, it makes that transition away from fossil fuels a little bit tricky and a little bit clumsy at times.
But I also am really glad that you are working on the short to mid-term rather than mid-term to long term, you know, I think this is exactly what the word transition probably means, is, you know, you need to look at short to midterm, midterm, mid to long term, long term, you know, and you need to tackle each of those time frames. So one of the final questions, because I don't want to keep you for too long, but you did talk about we're kind of stuck in terms of our financial pathways. Is there any sort of financial pathway for this transition? You said that our political system is kind of an obstacle, but is there much push here in terms of that?
We're getting there. And look, I suppose the political system just reflects what people want, essentially, doesn't it? You know, so I suppose it's maybe broader than the political system. It's also the social system. And it's just years and decades as well, Aidan, of how we've become accustomed to financing things. You know, again, if you take your home heating system, fossil fuel boiler is cheap. It's very little money up front, but you pay a huge amount over the lifetime of the boiler itself. And we forget that. We just see the upfront cost as being soft. Yeah. So that needs to change. Same with retrofitting. I think a big challenge in Ireland is that we know our homes leak 60% of their heat and 60% of their energy. That's not very good. But again, there's a huge obstacle to us investing in our homes. So one of the ways we could get around that is by trying, you know, really, really radical things. And then, you know, giving financial payments that aren't linked to a person, but are linked to a property. So let's just say you wanted to retrofit your home. you know, it costs maybe 40,000 to 50,000 euros. That's a big, you know, that's a big chunk of money, and very few people can afford to make that investment. But if the payments were linked to the lifetime of your property, so your house might last hopefully 100 years, 120 years, and whoever's living in the house would make those repayments over 120 years, then you're dealing with much, much lower upfront costs that are spread out over a lifetime of a period, because the value of the work that you did to the house goes beyond your lifetime. No, let's not get too morbid here, but look, some of the things that we do, the benefit will extend beyond our lifetime. And by leveraging the finance to the benefit of the action that you've done, and by linking it to that, that really de-risks the financial investment that has to be made.
You're saying that the person only pays for the cost for the amount of time that they've spent in that dwelling.
Exactly. Yeah. And whoever moves up, whoever, if you sell the house or somebody else moves in or your kids take it over, then they pick up.
Yeah. You know, it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we talk a lot in climate change about the future and the kids, and that's fair enough. And that's correct. But they need to pick up some of the tab as well. And that's fair, particularly around things where the benefit extends to them.
It's actually so much more fair than us doing all of it now.
But it's different, Dwayne, isn't it? You know, if you think if you chat to someone and you know someone in banking or someone in financing about this, they'll think you're crazy, right? They'll say, "Well, no, you need to make your repayments within 8 years, 10 years, 12 years." You know, so financial institutions. And we used to do this in Ireland. We used to do it in Europe, you know, with building council houses or building large infrastructure. And you'd spread the debt over the lifetime of the infrastructure. It makes a lot more sense and it makes a lot more palatable. But we have a financial institution that, again, comes back to that short termism that's focused really on, you know, getting a return within a couple of years rather than getting a fair return over the lifetime of the benefit.
So we all as a nation, maybe even as more than a nation, more of an entire part of the world, probably need to think about how we can change our mindset in terms of this long-termism.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that starts with the when politicians and our electoral representatives knock at the door. You know, it's not so much about asking questions anymore about the road or, you know, the immediate present. It's about asking about the future and what are their plans for the future, because I think we are very lucky in Ireland. We have a democracy, we have a healthy democracy, and with all its mediocrity, that's fine, you know. But at least the great thing about democracies is that they're flexible and they reflect the will of the people. And if we have a people are concerned about an issue or something around energy or around the healthy environments, that will ripple through into the political system, which eventually hopefully will percolate out into the financial system. So it takes time, but it starts with you and me. It starts with all of us listening today and just kind of raising these questions and asking these questions and seeing what the responses come back and if those responses are good enough or not.
I could leave you on this question, and you just mentioned it there, but maybe to elaborate on it a little bit. What would you say to the average Irish person? What could they do to help this situation?
There's lots of obvious things that we can all do. You know, we all know about solar panels and insulating and EVs and, you know, walking more. But I think the biggest thing is just talking about it, especially around election time. You know, I think that's when it matters most. We know what we have to do. We have the blueprints, but we do need that political bravery. You know, politicians do need that political safety net. That if they're putting their head on the chopping block and saying, well, look, we need to put in that cycle lane. You know, we know it's going to be inconvenient for people. We know people aren't going to like it. But in the long term, that's going to pay a benefit. They will need that safety net of knowing that there's a cushion of people who support them. So I think the greatest thing we can do as individuals is vote and encourage the not only the political future that we want, but the societal future that we need.
Dr. Dean, this was such an interesting conversation. And again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Aidan. That was great. Thank you.
This is the end of the podcast. We hope you enjoyed your time. If you're feeling generous and you're not completely skint, why don't you give us some of your money? Join our Patreon. Join our Patreon. Join our Patreon. Join our Patreon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.